The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Coming up later, Casey Keller joins us to look ahead to those two semi-finals in the MLS Is Back tournament. Plus, we've got Frank Leboeuf and Julien Laurent to talk about Chris Smalling returning to Manchester United as a hero. We'll start, though, by going to Wembley. Brentford taking on Fulham in the Championship final. This one went to extra time. Fulham in the end winning by 2-1. Leeds United, Jack Harrison with us, as is Don Hutchinson. Don, let's start with you. This was a tough watch for the opening 90 minutes, and then everything happened really in extra time. That never happens.
It never happens. It was a bit of a grind, to be honest, watching the game. It was almost like two teams didn't want to lose the game, so they were rigid in their formation. They weren't taking any chances. Then it got close to an hour mark and still nothing happening, and it went to extra time where the dynamics of the game changes. Everyone gets a little bit looser, get a bit more freedom, a bit more energy from somewhere. And then all of a sudden, I mean, Byram scored an unbelievable free kick. Bad goalkeeping decision, thinking he was going to whip the cross in, and then from there Fulham looked in control. And the second goal was the best move of the match, actually, when Mitrovic just laid a little 1-2 and then the inside finish. So in the end, I think just Fulham were the better side, because as I said, they were the team on the front foot trying to get the win away. I was disappointed in Brentford.
Don, maybe a little complimentary there to the fact it was a good, great, exceptional free kick, Jack, when really you expect your goalkeeper to stop that.
Yeah, I think he'll be maybe a little bit disappointed with that. Obviously, it's a great individual thinking from Brian as well to be able to do that in moments like this on such a big stage as well, where it means so much. And, you know, to do that is incredible on the spot thinking. But I think the goalkeeper might be looking back at that and maybe regretting a little bit. But at the end of the day, it's a great move from Brian, and he's won them the game from that.
What a time, though, Don, to drop a shakastrophic moment from Raya.
Well, it was. I mean, I'd love to see it back again, because we were watching it live unfolding in front of Rives. We've not really seen a replay, but I would give the fullback the credit for taking it on, because we were sat really close by him. We were looking at the defenders defending on the 18-yard line, and we all thought, watching it, they was going to whip it in. And he had the goalkeeper thinking exactly the same thing. So I'd like to see where the goalkeeper's position was. It couldn't have been absolutely right, because you shouldn't be scoring from there. But still, the execution to take that on, you know, in a final, you know, when the easy option would have been just clip it in the box, take your chances and see what happens. But he was brave enough to take the shot on. And as I said, the execution was first class.
Joe Bryan, one goal all season, Jack. Then he gets a brace of the Championship final.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously he's come out when it means the most, and you know that's what you expect from your players on this stage. You want your players to step up and to make the most of those opportunities, and he's done exactly that today.
Jack, we kind of saw, as we mentioned, like that opening 90 minutes, if you like, was so nervy. Can you kind of empathise with the players because of what was on the line today? It was all about not making a mistake.
A little bit. Well, yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to find that balance in these games. You know, you don't want to be too excessive and maybe cause yourself problems that can, you know, lead to consequences. But, you know, I think both teams did really well breaking the press from each side. Both teams were pressing really high. Both teams did really well to break each other's press. But then after that, it wasn't really like anything happened. They didn't capitalize on that going forward and just ended up circling back around. So, you know, that's where that fine line is, to try and find the balance, which is hard for players, you know, on this stage. But, I think, as Don said, as we went into the extra time, team started to kind of push for the goals a little bit, maybe looking forward a bit more and causing a few problems, and that's when the game started to open up. And as spectators, that's, you know, that's the football that you want to see. So yeah, maybe a little bit disappointing for the 90 minutes, but you know, in the end, it's a great result for Fulham, and I'm sure they'll be over the moon to be going back to the Premier League next year.
Obviously disappointing to lose a final, that's stating the obvious, Don. But it's disappointment on top of disappointment for Brentford after they could have clinched it, of course, on the final day of the season as well. After that incredible run when football returned, they've hit two buffers at very key times.
That's probably just inexperience. And that's what I think you saw even tonight from Thomas Frank's side, where, you know, they should have been before the game. Everyone was saying, I was seeing a few colleagues of mine, and they were saying, how do you see the game going? And I was leaning towards Fulham, but a tight 1-0. And I asked them, and they went, if Brentford get the ball down and play, they win the game. And if they start well and they start getting their confidence going and moving the ball as good as they can, they'll win the game. And I didn't see that from Brentford tonight. I didn't see it in the last two games where they struggled. So they must be a little bit nervy, expected. Listen, I've been in three finals in the playoffs and all three have finished 1-0. So they are tight. I've lost two and won one. So it's very rarely do you see an absolute classic. You get them every now and again. You see a 4-3 and you see games that go to penalties with loads of goals. But the majority of the times you see really nervous games. I thought Brentford looked really nervy.
Don, Fulham probably automatically now favourites to go back down. Fair?
I think so, because I think if you take yourself back to a couple of years when Fulham come up, they spent £100 million, but the recruitment was so shoddy. It was just names, and it was just, you know, looked good on paper when they spent over £100 million. Now the recruitment's got to be a lot better, because the performances this season have been okay, but that wasn't a Premier League performance. Now, listen, it comes with a caveat of being a final, so you can't really judge them on a one-off 90 minutes plus extra time. But I think Scotty Parker's a realist. I think he'll know where the deficiencies lie, and there's quite a few of them. There were some exceptions. I thought Tom Kearney played really well. He controlled the game. He plays at his own tempo. He could do a little bit more. He could pass the ball forward a lot quicker, but the game comes easy to him and he keeps possession. At the top end of the pitch, and someone like Mitrovic, if they keep him away from red cards and yellow cards, he should be fine. But I think for Scotty Parker, he needs to go into that transfer market quickly, because he hasn't got a lot of time, and have a semi-rebuild. I don't think it's a 6 and 7 man job, but two or three quality signings might be enough. But they will struggle if they don't bring anyone in.
The Fulham players and fans then will be partying tonight. Jack, are you done with partying? Have you celebrated Leeds promotion now enough? I imagine there were some good celebrations.
Yeah, no, definitely some controlled celebrations under the circumstances. But no, I think we had our fair share of celebrations. Everybody's really happy. And I think now everyone just wants to start getting back to the Premier League now. I think talking with the lads, everyone just seems really excited about that opportunity going into next year. So we just can't wait to get started now. We start again in, I think, 2 weeks, so for pre-season. So yeah, I think everybody's really looking forward to it.
How cool is that? When did it really sink in that you are a Premier League player now?
I still don't think it's quite sunken in yet. I don't think it'll really sink in until the first game where you walk out and obviously in a Premier League stadium. We don't know the fixtures yet or anything like that, but until we start preparing for that, I don't think it'll really sink in until then. I think as of right now, I'm just trying to enjoy the moment, enjoy the time and the celebrations, like you said, with the team. And I'll be there again next season. So it's exciting to go back and do it all again in a few weeks.
It's quite unique, almost, the Championship, because of the grind, because of the number of matches, and because what's at stake at the end, Jack. How is it like to live that day to day with that pressure almost on every game, especially at Leeds, everybody talking about the fact that you were going to go up, yet you still had to get it done? The relief must have been quite something.
Yeah, no, it was. Everybody was so relieved by the end of it. We were all watching. Forgot what game it was, but when we got promoted, everyone was watching it together, and the joy and happiness that we shared together was remarkable, really. But just saying with Don before, the Championship is such a hard league to play in, and after, you know, the first year with Bielsa, we just fell short, and obviously really disappointed. We didn't want that to happen again, but we knew what to expect going throughout the year. And so then coming into this last season, everybody knew what was coming, and we knew what we had to do in order to finish the job that we didn't do the previous year. So it was obviously a very happy moment for everybody. I think with the Premiership, I think they're going to reduce the weeks to 36 weeks next year. So it's going to be similar to the Championship this last year as well, with the amount of games per week and all that. So I'm sure, without a doubt, under Marcelo Bielsa, we'll be more than prepared for anything.
Well, that's the question that I imagine you're asked the most, and I will go along with it and ask you as well. What's Bielsa like to work under?
It's very unique, but you know, as a young player like myself, I'm always looking to learn, and there's no one better to learn from him. Is the amount of detail that he thinks about the game, and that he can improve you as a player. As if you're a smart player, then you learn to take these things on board and take as much in as you can, and that's exactly what I've been trying to do these last 2 years. It's been a very different experience, but a very eye-opening one as well, just for the amount of information and the amount of things that you can learn under him.
Unique isn't necessarily a good word. Stevie Nicholls' diet, for example, is unique, Jack. What in particular makes it different to other managers that you've worked under? And how difficult is it to adapt to that?
Well, I wouldn't really say unique is a bad word. I'd say it is a good thing, really. As a player, you're always looking for different experiences to broaden your game and things that you can learn from. And I think with him, unique is a great word. I think you know, the amount of analysis that he goes into with his coaching staff is something new to me as a player. I've never really experienced the amount of depth and detail that he goes into for every single game. I was just saying to Don earlier, our scouting reports are 20, 30 minutes long sometimes, and we're talking about all the different formations, the possible formations that the opposite team can play, and each individual player. And to me, as a player, you want to know these things, and then in training as well. The training is not like anywhere else that I've experienced. I've not been to that many teams, but the teams that I have been to, it's been completely different. We don't do any possession in training. There's no small-sided games or anything like that. Everything is there's a lot of drill-orientated exercises, and it's hard for me to explain just in a conversation. But you know, on paper, there's so much detail that Marcelo goes into. That's the unique part about him, and I think why all these top managers like Pep and Pochettino that look up to him is because of this detail that he's able to go into.
Obviously, when Leeds got the promotion, there was a lot of coverage because they are such a big side. When you arrived, did you realise how big that it was and how passionate these fans are and how important it is to the city?
When I first arrived, I never, I knew Leeds was a big club, but I didn't really understand the depth of the club or anything like that, because I think when you come to the games and you see the fans and you see how much it means to them day in, day out, these fans literally live for football, and it's almost like there's nothing else that exists in life. It's only Leeds United. And especially, you know, when we got promoted and we see all the fans at the stadium, and you can see how much it means to everybody at the club, everyone, you know, in the city. Like you said, it's an incredible thing to be a part of. And I'm just happy that, you know, I'm able to help Leeds, you know, get back to the Premier League after such a long time, and I think they deserve to be there. So I'm really looking forward to making the most out of it next year, and you know, hopefully making more people happy.
Final point, Jack. Don said that Leeds have got no chance of staying up. What do you think?
you didn't tell me that. I don't know. No, I think, you know, with Marcelo, I think anything is possible. I think we have a team and that's dedicated, that is motivated, and under the leadership of Marcelo, I think we're more than capable of staying up. You look how Sheffield United have gone up, and they're an organised team, very their tactics are, you know, detailed as well, just like Marcelo, and they've done extremely well this last year, so we're hoping that we can do the same, if not better, than Sheffield United. I think that'll be a great year for us next year.
Jack Harrison, thank you very much for your time. Thanks to Don as well. So this is it. This is how the 2019-2020 Championship Final finishes. Leeds United and West Brom, of course, that automatic promotion. They're joined now by Fulham in the Premier League, which kicks off next month.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. September the 18th, then the Bundesliga on ESPN for the season. Robert Lewandowski, of course, had a sensational campaign. 51 goals in 43 games. He spoke exclusively to Alexis Nunes.
Just thinking of the Bundesliga, sometimes, you know, people say it's not as competitive as, say, like the Premier League because, you know, it's always Bayern, Bayern, Bayern and by a lot. But this season, it kind of felt a bit more competitive. You mentioned Leipzig. We saw them at the top of the table for a bit. You know, Dortmund's always there, a threat. Mönchengladbach was there too. Did you find that this season was maybe a bit more challenging than the others?
Yes, for sure. That I have to say that this season was very hard. That was very tough because in the beginning, we cannot forget that we were on the seventh place in Bundesliga and we had, I don't know, 11, 12 points behind Borussia Gladbach. And then we woke up and we say, hey, come on, guys, it's too much. We have to keep working. We have to looking forward. And looking forward mean that we have to keep working on our best form and to be closer to the other teams. And I think so in the end here, we were already 5 points behind. And that was, okay, it's not good, but it's the better position to start follow the another teams and try to be in the first place, and we did, and that is something special, amazing, because we know that was not easy. We fought it since a few months to be on the top, and in the end we did it. That's mean that that the finish on Bundesliga for us was something amazing, because that was COVID time. This season was very difficult, but we did it. And that's why, I mean, that was something amazing.
I'm sure Bayern are definitely thanking their lucky stars that they have you, because Bayern topped the standings. You topped the standings in terms of goals again, 34, six more than Timo Werner, who got second. I know you're not surprised. But, you know, people say that when you turn 30, it's supposed to get harder, but you make it look like it gets easier. So, I mean, what's your secret? How do you maintain that?
Yeah, sometimes that looks only that is easier, but it's not. And, you know, that I had 31 games, I think, so this season. I scored 34 goals, and I have to say that's, it's very difficult to score so many goals in Bundesliga. It's because we have four less games as another leagues, for example, and I couldn't play in three games more, so I had maybe seven games less as another league, because another league you have 38 games, and I had 31 games and I scored 34 goals, and then that for me was amazing season. I know that I have to stay focused to be better, stay focused in for my job. You know, it's not only if you are tired, if you have bad day, it's not only that you have to play, pass to running. In the end, you have to be focused to score in these small goals, you know, and sometimes your mentality is very important, how you work before the game, not during the game. And sometimes it's more important what you did before the game, during all weeks, for example, or during 3 days before the game. And that's why the best is coming in the game. And that time you have to be ready for everything. If you thinking slowly, sometimes 1% less like before, you maybe you don't get the chance to to score the goals. And if you get this chance, you have to be ready for 100%, because maybe you didn't get any more chance in this game. That's why it's very important. And I know that for the striker, it's sometimes very difficult to fight with the opponent, with the defender, and to build a new situation, to be on the right time, in the right position. And I have to say, you have to be on the top level with mentality, with physically, with your body, with everything. And sometimes it's not so easy, like looks.
Final question. I mean, people are angry, Louis. People are angry. They are angry for you when the announcement was made that they canceled the Ballon d'Or, because so many people around the world said that you deserved it, that this was your award. How did you feel? Because even Karl-Heinz Rummenigge came out and he said that he felt it was a bit unfair, because to him, you were the top contender after everything you've done this season. And so many people around the world felt that too. Were you disappointed any at all?
I appreciate that. I have to say that so many fans stay behind me and thinking that everything what they can do for me, that is better. And I love my fans, and I love the people who want to for me the best. And I have to say that for this now, for me, the Ballon d'Or is no subject, no tema in my life, because we have Champions League. We have so many games until the end year. And this is for me more important in this moment, like something what I cannot do this nothing, and I don't think about this, because it's what we have August here, and we have so many games until the end year, and I want to show and be the best form, the best skills show in the next few months. And what's happening in the end year is something not what I have in my head now. So that's why I don't think about this. And for me, it's really no subject, no term in my life or in my home.
Great stuff. By the way, more of that interview will be on tomorrow's show. Be sure to check it out. We've talked about this quite a bit, haven't we, over the last few weeks, but Manchester City confirmed it today. Ferran Torres, the latest addition to Pep Guardiola's squad, the 20-year-old, moving for €27 million. Let's welcome in Frank Leboeuf and Julian Laurent. Jules, I know you've seen a lot of him. Tell us about him.
Great young player, very, very promising, loads of potential. As you said, 20-year-old, but already had played some big games with Valencia, where he went through the academy. One of the biggest talent in his generation, not just in Spain, but also in the whole of Europe. And he was very coveted, mostly because of the price. As you said, €27 million for someone like him with that kind of talent is an absolute bargain. And it's mostly down to the fact that he had only 1 year left in his contract at Valencia, didn't want to renew because of the mess that the club was in, although he's a child of the club, really. So it was a great coup for City to go and sign him. He's a very Pep Guardiola kind of player, very elegant, very intelligent, who could play in different positions. And you could already see the progress that he can make under Guardiola for how long Guardiola stays at City with him, because the talent is there. He just needs to build it into whatever he wants. And I think him working with Guardiola was surely one of the main reasons why he chose City over other clubs. And clubs like Dortmund, for example, who are really keen on young, talented players like him, especially if you think about replacing Jadon Sancho, also looked at him. But I think once City were there, there was no other club for Ferran Torres.
He's not French, so Frank doesn't care. Let's turn our attention then now, shall we, to what's going on at Manchester United. Very keen to get Chris Smalling back from Roma, of course, on loan. Interesting stuff from Solskjaer saying, I think Chris has shown over his career how valuable he is at Manchester United. This season was about him being regular and going to Rome and showing how good a centre-back he is. I wanted to give Maguire, Lindelof and maybe Axel a chance. Frank, so the thing is, you've got Chris Smalling coming back from Italy as this hero now who's going to save the Manchester United defence. I suppose the point is, if he was so good in the first place, why did they let him go on loan?
That's exactly the question you can ask, because after a year, suddenly Chris Smalling became at 30 years old, 31 years old, a fantastic player, where he was criticized by even the Manchester United fans, and then been on loan for a year at Roma because he was undesirable from Manchester United and Solskjaer's staff. So I don't know what's going on. On top of it, you have Lindelof, who's doing great. People are talking about the duo from from Maguire with Maguire and Smalling, where Lindelof is really the best of the three for me. So I don't know what's going on there. I don't know why Solskjaer has to make a point about Smalling, because we are not that naive. We know what they really think about Smalling. I don't know what they're doing with him, because he's still qualified for the Europa League with Roma, but now he's not going to play with Roma, and he's not going to be able to play the end of the competition with Manchester United. That's insane. Same in another way. And I don't understand the point.
Jules, I tell you what, Solskjaer's good at this, isn't he? No matter how much we criticise him in part of the show, he's got this kind of way of spinning things to get United fans on board.
Yes, he's been very clever, I thought, in all the declarations or the quotes that he gave in the last, even before the restart. But even if you think about it, during the lockdown as well, he was quite regular on the Manchester United podcast, and then were sent out to a lot of medias all around the world. And I thought the messages that he gave out at that time were very clever and very good as well, very positive. The thing with Smalling, let's not forget that I think Manchester United will buy Jadon Sancho, which would be quite a lot of money in this current context and climate. If they spend £100 million, for example, €120 million on one player, I don't think they will have then much money left to buy the centre-back that they really wanted as well this summer. And in that case, it's quite clever to bring back Smalling, do a bit of competition with Maguire, Lindelof, Bailly, whoever, and Chris Smalling knows the club so well, he knows the Premier League, he will be a useful centre-back anyway. And then maybe him and Maguire playing together regularly, you see that partnership getting stronger and stronger. Maybe he will push Lindelof to become better, and Maguire as well. And maybe it'd be very positive to have Smalling back at the club, especially, as we said, if you can't buy a Koulibaly or someone, or a David Alaba or someone like that would have really strengthened your defence. So all in all, it might not be a bad idea.
You think so, Joel? So basically, they're making do because they've put all their eggs in the Jadon Sancho basket. Is that fair?
But Sancho was always the priority anyway, before a centre-back, before a defensive midfielder, before a right-back or cover left-back or a first-choice left-back even. Sancho was always, from the beginning, the priority at the club. So once you've done that, and he's really a player that you need, because as good as Mason Greenwood has been in the last 10 games, since the restart especially, he can't last the whole season at 17 or 18. This is not possible. So Sancho will definitely give an upgrade to your team. But then if you don't have any money left for the rest, you have the other position that you want to strengthen. You have to think a bit outside of the box and maybe differently. And that's why I think Smalling comes in, had a great season at Roma, has improved, is more experienced, more mature. You know what? Let's bring him in and see how that goes. But certainly, he would not be a bad thing to have Smalling back, especially if you can't recruit another centre-back.
Go on, Frank.
Jules, Dan, I'm very sorry, but I understand the clubs, you know, and the future that they offer to us in terms of football, where they really think that the fans, they don't understand football anymore, that buying somebody like Sancho is a priority of the club. When you see the players that they have at front, like we can see for Chelsea, because I know that some Manchester United fans will say, well, he doesn't like Manchester United. No, that's for me insane when you have weaknesses in some positions that you don't try to buy your players in from those positions, but you double the position where you're already strong on. So it's the same for Chelsea with Werner and Ziyech coming, where they have a quite strong young players like Mount, like Pulisic, of course, Abraham. And it's the same for Manchester United with Martial, with all the players that they have at front, where Chelsea and Manchester United, they're really very, very weak at the back. So that's the main problem. It's like this is the same for Manchester City. It's the same for Barcelona. They try to make people think that they are improving the game or the club and the team by buying forward players, where they have to stabilize the defense, where they're really, really bad in defense, and that's obvious for everybody. That's been the big link between those clubs who can't find and can't have a trophy because they're so weak. It's the case for Manchester United and Chelsea, and that's why I'm talking about them. And you see that the priority is not buying a central defender. So I think it's pretty strange, the world we and the new world of football. I don't understand it anymore.
Jules?
No, I get Frank's points completely. But if you go back on Jadon Sancho and Manchester United, he's much better than Mason Greenwood, who has been great, but again, cannot last the whole season. You can't rely on Mason Greenwood to be decisive like he's been in the last seven, eight games. The whole season with 60 games to play. Jadon Sancho is an England international. He's an amazing player, has been one of the best wingers in the whole of Europe this season. This is an amazing signing. If you can make it, go and make it. This is amazing. It's, you know, if you have a front three of Rashford, Martial and Sancho, and behind that Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba, this is incredible going forward. Of course, defensively, you need to work on things. Yes, if you can strengthen your defense, you know, go for it. But I think if you have the choice of signing Jadon Sancho, you go for it and you sign him and you secure him. This could be the best player in the world in 2 or 3 years, easily. He could win the Ballon d'Or. This is how talented he is, so you go and get him.
Jules, I can agree with you if you consider that having the best attack is the way to win stuff. But we all know that that's not true. That clubs have won, especially this year, trophies, their own championship, because of their defense. Real Madrid, because of Sergio Ramos and the others, they won it because they were stronger than Barcelona, because they don't have Barcelona hasn't got any good defenders comparing to Real Madrid. The same for City versus Liverpool. Well, Van Dijk made the difference and made the others better because they were stronger defensively. And of course, they are fantastic strikers, but it's always the same thing. If you think that having the best attack in the world makes you sure to win the championship, you're wrong, because in the all history of football, you know that you have to be strong in defense in order to win titles. And they will never change from there.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right, but maybe Solskjaer thinks that Maguire and Lindelof can keep growing together. At times this season, they've been very solid. Okay, you've got a problem maybe with De Gea, but you've got Dean Henderson who's coming back to the club, and maybe that competition between the two can be also positive for De Gea, and De Gea can maybe come back to his best level. And then maybe the back four of, I don't know, let's say Luke Shaw, Maguire, Lindelof and Wan-Bissaka, Solskjaer thinks that they can grow together and become a bit more solid. Having Paul Pogba there all the season in front of your back four can help as well to be more solid defensively. And maybe, like Liverpool did with Van Dijk, maybe they wanted to sign a centre-back this summer and thought, you know what, we're going to go for Sancho and we wait in January to sign whoever we wanted as centre-back, and maybe then they will do it and have the centre-back that is better than Lindelof, for example, or Smalling. So you just don't know. I just think that when you started to make Sancho your priority, you have to go for it and go all the way and then think about the other position. But I also agree with you defensively. They certainly have to be stronger if they want to be able to compete for the title.
I was worried you frozen there for a moment, Dan, Jules.
The question is, can you be an Arsenal fan and the Manchester United lawyer? Is that possible?
Are you referring to Mr. Laurent's loyalties? Frank and Jules will be back with us for extra time. Be sure to check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Iker Casillas announced his retirement today from professional soccer, and there aren't many that can boast this sort of resume. He's won it all. World Cup, European Championship, Champions League and La Liga as well. An extraordinary career. We'll welcome back Casey to talk about it, because Casey, your paths must have crossed, yeah, when you were in Spain?
Yeah, we did a cool interview together right when he was breaking through in 99. And kind of the premise of the interview was I was supposed to be the veteran goalkeeper. And then, you know, what advice do I have for the young guy coming through? And obviously, Iker took all that advice extremely well and went on to have one of the best careers of all time in goal. So I have a lot of respect for what Casillas has done, obviously, you know, breaking through in Real Madrid at 19 years old and then, you know, keeping that job for 13, 14 years and accumulating the matches, but all the titles, and then doing the same with the Spanish national team. So, you know, it was fun to be a part, you know, in a very small part at the very beginning, playing against him and having a fun little interview together, and then just watching him go on and just become this world icon.
Incredible success that he had at Real Madrid, and then, of course, Spain captain as well. Just quickly, Casey, it's interesting. He doesn't really look like a goalkeeper, and that's a strange thing to say, in that he's not particularly tall, he's not particularly dominating, but it's just his reflexes were extraordinary.
Yeah, there was no question that he was a shot stopper, you know, and that was the first thing that he kind of relied on. And then, as you know, like most goalkeepers do, you get better with reading the game and coming for crosses and doing things like on that side of it. And I think he relied on what his strengths were at the beginning, and then matured into just being, just like I said, one of the world's top goalkeepers. And again, it just goes to show there is no stereotype, right? Mm. I mean, you can be 6 feet tall, you can be 6 foot five, you can be bigger, smaller, more out of your box, more on your line. It doesn't really matter. It's just about how you go and perform for your side and how you keep the ball out of the back of the net. And Casillas was one of the best.
Thank you very much, Casey. Just a reminder, be sure to join us tomorrow, the second part of that Robert Lewandowski exclusive, plus the return of the Europa League. I'll leave you, though, with Extra Time, Frank and Jules, and some special guests. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweet. A French feel today. Frank Leboeuf is with us. And back from holiday, Julien Laurent. Jules, I know you've got your kids who are desperate to be on Extra Time, so would you like them to come and say bonjour, hello, whatever language they talk?
Yes, they can. They can come and say bonjour. It's only my two boys. The little girl, she's asleep.
Oh, yeah. Well, you prefer the boys anyway.
Raphael, the oldest one.
Yeah, look at that.
And then Maximilian.
Oh, yes.
Here you go. New PSG shirt as well, as you can see.
Who do they support?
You have to. Who do you support?
Who do they support?
PSG.
Yeah.
Oh, good fantastic boys. Very. Look, I'm so much better behaved than mine.
The mother must be beautiful.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, of course she is, you know.
All right.
They all come from there.
All right, boys. Thank you very much. Bonsoir. Right, let's get to the questions, shall we? We all need Frank's reaction to the video of his disgraceful defending against Newcastle in the 96-97 season. Now, to put this into context, somebody sent it to me because it's Craig Burley scoring on Xhaka. Yet the whole game just seems to be revolved around Frank being terrible.
Oh, yeah. that was my worst game ever, I guess.
What
do you
happened?
Remember Jules or not? I don't know, you know, sometimes,
no.
I think Shearer, when I made an assist to Shearer, I think it was very early in the game.
Yeah.
And I think it was so stupid that I wanted to give the header to the goalkeeper, and I completely missed it, and it disturbed me for the whole game long. And I was really, maybe the worst game ever that I ever played in my life. That was horrible, and I think Ruud Gullit hammered me at the end of the game.
How is it? What's it like after a game like that, Frank? You know, how do you get over it? Is it in your head for a long time?
No, it's just that you feel ashamed and very ashamed for your teammates, because you know what you did. You know that you were better than that, but you let your teammates down because you made two silly mistakes and maybe more. I don't even remember, but it was a off day and it was really an off day. And you go back to the dressing room and you say, sorry guys, sorry, it was really horrible and I'm very sorry, I will do my best next week. That's the only thing you can do. Because losing against Newcastle, I mean, it's not a shame. Newcastle at the time was a great, great team, and it wasn't a shame to lose at St James Park. But the way you do it, JC, you look stupid. You look stupid, you're like amateur. You look, you shouldn't be there. And I definitely shouldn't be there.
I love the fact that Frank asked you, Jules, if you remember that game. You were like 15, as if you were just sat watching every Frank LeBeouf match.
No, I mean, remember all games.
No. A compilation of Frank LeBeouf's highlights or lowlights, yes, in that case.
Okay, Jules, the other day, good, Frank said that Pochettino may not be a bigger upgrade than Setien at Barcelona. Do you agree with that?
No, I have to disagree. I think if you can get Pochettino, everything that Pochettino has done through his career, if you compare it with what Setien did, and Setien had a great season at Betis and they played really well and they were very exciting to watch and it was very different, the way they set up and the way they pressed and the way they play. But I think Pochettino has something, even in his management, the way he runs the dressing room is completely different than Setien does. Setien doesn't know how to do it, doesn't know how to do it with big players, with big egos. But I think Pochettino, probably coming from the fact that Pochettino has been there as a player, you know, he was a great player, he captained Argentina, captained loads of clubs, including PSG again. And I think that's a big difference as well. I think Setien is great tactically and the way he knows the game, and he's one of those who has such a great football mind, but I think Pochettino will be a big upgrade compared to Setien.
Have you changed your mind, Frank, in the last 24 hours?
No, the thing is, it's not what I really said. I explained, you know, the way Barcelona was, the club was working, and having somebody from the area, from knowing the club very well, it's maybe better. And I said exactly that Xavi is about to come, because I think Xavi is about to come. And I think everybody is waiting for Xavi to decide whether he's going to come now or within a year, which I think it's more surely the time he's going to come. And they don't want to take a risk to get a new coach for maybe only a year, because they know that Xavi is going to come. So for me, Setien is good enough to sort out the problems with Messi and Griezmann and the others while we wait for Xavi. Pochettino is a fantastic coach, and I've seen him working very well for Spurs. And he's, because if he's Argentinian, Messi is going to be happy with him. But what you're going to do with Pochettino, when you have Xavi ready to come, that's going to be a problem. It's going to be an issue for the club, because they're desperately waiting for Xavi.
But what happens then if it all goes wrong early on in the season next season with Setien? You just stick with him? Yeah, stuff this season, doesn't matter. We'll just wait for Xavi. He's going to come in, save the day. Everything's going to be great again.
They're going to get the reserve coach to substitute Setien, and they're going to wait for Xavi until next season. It's what they do most of the time. I don't know. I have some names I didn't know before they came to Barcelona. Well, they didn't come. They were already there, and they've been picked from the reserve team to the A team, I think, because I'd never heard about them.
What a terrible plan. Right, okay, next one, Frank. Which is the lesser of two evils for you as a defender? A shaky and nervous goalkeeper, or a central defensive partner who keeps making mistakes?
I will go for the goalkeeper, because at least if you have a teammate who keep on making mistakes like myself and Newcastle for the other central defender, you normally still have the goalkeeper to help you out, you know, and save you in the last action. So Yeah, a shaky goalkeeper is never good because you need to feel the confidence of a goalkeeper. It's what I had with all the, mostly the goalkeeper that I had, especially Fabien Barthez or Bernard Lama with the national team. But when you have a shaky one, you say, oh my God, if I make a mistake, there's nobody to save us behind. If you have a central defender who keep on making mistakes, the right back can or the left back, depending on where he plays, can cover and help you out, and the goalkeeper too.
Did you and Barthez get mixed up a lot from fans?
Oh yeah, one day I was in many times. But I was called Carambe, which is quite obvious that we don't look alike, but we have the only B at the end. I was called Frank Leblanc because of Laurent Blanc and myself down the street. But Fabien Barthez last time was like 3 years ago when somebody said, hey, Fabien, Fabien. I didn't answer because my first name is not Fabien. Yes. But I knew that he was talking to me. And after like a minute saying, Fabien, Fabien, oh, come on, answer to me. I didn't answer. He started to insult me. So I called Fabien Barthez and I left him a message and I said, Fabien, I'm very sorry. Somebody is insulting you. And he keeps on doing it. I'm very sorry. Now, yes, of course, because yeah, when you are bald, we're all brothers. We know that.
Yeah, exactly. Who was more successful, Fabien Barthez or Frank Leboeuf, Jules?
Oh, Fabien.
Successful in terms of trophies, you mean?
Just in terms of me trying to stir things up.
I mean, they were both very successful. I guess the thing that Frank doesn't have that Fabien has is the Champions League with Marseille in 93. But apart from that, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty similar.
He wasn't top goal scorer in the second tier of French football, though, in 1988, was he, Frank? You text me that.
I texted to you because you sent me something from Transfermarkt that we
were talking about missing penalties. Yeah, that was it. And you'd missed 2 out of 30. Yeah. And you were terrible website.
But I finished second top scorer in the League Two with 19 goals. But I think it was like 13 penalties.
Wow. And then I replied to you, it must have been a terrible quality league. And then you replied something very naughty back.
We won't say it.
Following the Serie A awards, Jules, does Dybala really deserve the MVP ahead of Chiramoglu and Ronaldo? And is Szczęsny the best goalkeeper in the league this past season, really? Whose awards were these?
I don't know who awards were these, and I was on holiday, so I didn't really. It's the first time I'm hearing
of them.
Let's have
a look. Let me see if I can find them. you can fill when I'm looking, Jules.
Yeah, while you search, Dybala is a good one. I think Dybala is a very interesting one because, in fairness, he's been Juventus' best player this season, despite Ronaldo's goal scoring records, and I think at 35 scoring 31 goals.
So this is like the official Italian FA, the Italian FA Player of the Year went to Dybala.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, I think then we have to take it seriously, but we can still criticize it. So with Dybala, you know, I wouldn't be offended for Dybala to win that trophy. Of course, Immobile, I think, just for the amount of goals that he scored and for leading this Lazio team in that title race for most of the season. And it's been very impressive, and I personally would have given it to Ciro Immobile, and he certainly made my team of the year in Serie A. But I can see where the Dybala choice comes from, and again, he led Juventus to that title, so in a way, he deserves to be in there in the conversation. For Szczęsny, it's a tricky one. I don't think really there was one goalkeeper that was outstanding over the others this season. I think Szczęsny still conceded like around a goal a game, which is quite a lot. I think Skrakocza's Lazio, for me, was probably the best one of the season, and yet they were maybe a stronger side defensively than Juventus, who, by the way, for the first time I think in 10 years, were not the best defense in the season in Serie A, which I think tells you a lot about how the season went, you know, for this Juventus team and for Maurizio Sarri. But I don't think I would have had Szczęsny as best goalkeeper, no.
Final question. I read this through gritted teeth. For both, I aspire to be suave and exude the class and style of the French. What tips can either of you give me to do this? Jules.
Go on, Jules.
what a tip to be born French.
To be suave and exude the class and style of a Frenchman.
Okay. Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, I don't know what. I don't know if this listener or, you know, telespectator is as handsome as me and Frank. Right. I hope he is. Yes. And in that case, it's easier to be suave, of course. Always smile. This is always a good one. Always smile.
Always smile.
Be a bit cheeky, but not too much, you know. And be quite chilled and quite fun.
Yeah. Frank, would you like to add to that at all?
I don't know. I have some friends. They look more like rednecks in the middle of France, you know, and not being that suave and beautiful like the French cliché, you know. So it's
well,
I know some
friends,
American people or English people who are good enough to look suave and good-looking guys, you know. So it's just a cliché. You have to make sure that you make a woman laugh.
Ah,
that's a good thing.
I'm so happy.
Ah,
so,
here we go.
So happy you said laugh. Jules, last point. We saw your kids at the start. Who are they going to play for, France or England?
Football is France. They've decided. I mean, really, this the best chance they have to ever win a trophy anyway compared to England. If this rugby is Wales for their mother and cricket, they decided to play for England. So,
oh, goodness
me. They have the choice, you know, but they've already decided.
What if they change their mind and want to play for England, their country?
I do my best to convince them other way. Like, really, don't look. Look, I mean, history speaks for itself. Don't go with England, go with France.
That's it. Gentlemen, as always, thank you so much. A lot of fun. You keep your tweets coming in at ESPNFC.